working.
Go.
Whoa. Should have left well enough alone. Hi, I'm Wendell. I'm living loved by God. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work and control. I've had issues with porn and alcohol and rage and panic and depression. I'm going to talk to you tonight about something I have never preached or taught or anything about. It's brand new to talk about, not to think about, but to talk about. And that is leadership. Not trying to get you ready to be leaders or anything, just we're going to talk about leadership. And the way that it dovetails and gets all tangled up with codependency. Originally, the workbook that we're using in Pathway on our Thursday nights and the staff groups on Thursday noon, that workbook was designed for people coming out of a recovery home, probably would have been there 6, 8 months, maybe a whole year. And the last set of lessons that we wanted to offer to them was lessons on the world that they would face when they got out, because people who have been in a controlled environment, whether it's prison or recovery, wherever, they've been in a controlled environment, they get to understand codependency, how to handle it. And so the idea was give them a workbook to where they can understand codependency, because that's what drives all the dysfunction in the world. Addiction is my thing. Addiction is the way I treat myself and address myself and my pain. Codependency is how that involves other people. So we're all addicts and we're all codependents, whether we want to admit it or not. In some way or other, we are. And so somebody who's been in a very controlled environment, you want them to understand what they're going to face when they get out there. So we, in this workbook that we're going through right now, we're facing all different flavors and approaches and scenarios about codependency. And as we were people who, it was like, you know, a lot of, if you listen to the stories of people who have been either in jail or been in recovery homes or in some sort of in controlled environment, when they get out into public and they get in the workforce, one of the biggest issues they face is, how do I handle authority? Because there is a lot of really bad authority out there. There's really toxic, dangerous authority. Just because you wear the badge boss or leader or authority doesn't mean that you're a good person. In fact, a lot of organizations, school systems, churches, a lot of organizations, if you're not good in your job, they just promote you. They bump you up into another position, and if you're not good at that, they bump you up into. So a lot of the leaders in some of these systems are the hardest people to deal with. They're the most caustic and toxic people to deal with. Not in all organizations. It's just, my whole life is in the church. Her whole life is in the school system. We would just laugh at how, seriously, they just got put in that principal's job? Yeah, they were a terrible teacher. And then they do a really bad job as principal. They just got elected superintendent? Seriously? And same thing happened in the church. There are a lot of toxic. I already said the word, and I apologize for it. I want to pull back. I don't want to use the word bad leaders, because I think there are, let's just not use that word, okay? So a lot of people in leadership maybe shouldn't be there, and we all encounter them on a regular basis, and we all have stories to tell. In this lesson that we just finished Thursday, the first question is, without demonizing or naming names, describe the worst boss you've ever had. Nobody passed on that question. Everybody had an answer, and everybody had a fairly detailed answer to that question about the most toxic boss you've ever had or the most whatever. So bear with me as we go through this. The two lessons that we had on Thursday, people indicated that I hope this will be helpful. So you think about groups of people. Anytime you get a group of people, even if you go on the playground in kindergarten, and a bunch of kids who have never seen each other before come together, and they're going to play a game or they're going to do some kind of mutual activity, it's interesting to watch, because almost always somebody will rise to the top as some sort of leader. And sometimes they're really creative. Sometimes they know how to unite people, and they do it in a really nice way. And other times they're a bully, or they're a manipulator. They're just mean, or they're the strongest one there, so they force their way. So leadership groups just seem to always want to have a leader. And they're good ones and they're not so good ones. See, I didn't say bad. There's good ones and not so good ones. So I kind of wanted to break down what is a, if you look at it as a archery target, like the big bullseye, you got the bullseye and then the concentric circles going out. If you talk about groups, on the very outside of the groups, you have your curious spectators, people who aren't really invested or involved, but they kind of are curious about what goes on in this group. Then you come on into a little tighter circle, and you have your casual participants, people who are casually coming and participate now and then. Then you come another circle in, and you have your active participants. Then you come another circle in, and you've got your workers and or your servers, people who get things done. And then you come on in even closer, and maybe you have organizers that organize the workers and organize the servers. And you come on in, and then you have leaders and spokespersons for the group who actually speak and represent the group. But inevitably, not in every case, but inevitably, the group has the buck stops here leader. That you know, that's the, it has to have something. Because, I mean, I think you've noticed in Pathway, there is, I'm not a dictator. I defer to the resource group and what they say, we usually do. But every once in a while, there comes a time when somebody says, no, we're not going to paint it blue, we're going to paint it green. And you have to make those kind of calls, and that's the buck stops leader. So that's kind of the concentric circles of a target. Maybe the organizers, the leaders, the spokespersons, and the buck stops here leader. So what would a codependent leader look like? A rabidly codependent leader would always protect their position in power. Controlling others gets, I'm reading this, I'm just not going to even apologize for that. They always protect their position in power. Controlling others gets them high. They get buzzed seeing others do their bidding. All this is born out of a deep sense of insecurity. To give up power, even in a very small way, is an invitation to disaster. They, air quotes, lead out of fear, not courage. Their primal brain says their personal safety and satisfaction matter more than the good of the group, and they'll belittle or demonize anyone who says otherwise. So that's a very codependent leader. And so I tried to encapsulate that into one sentence as I was getting ready for this lesson. The objective, I'm actually kind of proud of this. So I'm stopping with a pregnant pause here. Don't clap yet, Rob. Wait till you hear. The objective needs, the real objective needs of the group are held ransom by the subjective needs of the leader. Group, did everybody catch that? The real and or the objective needs of the group are held ransom by the subjective needs of the leader, his insecurities and his need for power. So that's codependent leadership. So here's my stab, and I'm going to read it again, at what a healthy leader might look like. Healthy leaders always respect. They always tell the truth. They always value the opinions of others. They know and respect themselves, so they're just as happy following as they are leading. Only in a crisis will they issue orders or ultimatums or whatever. Go with blue, not green. Otherwise, they listen to the group to sense its collective heart. No competition, no condescension, no manipulation. Healthy leaders are not afraid to be questioned or opposed. They don't take it personally, but talk things through for mutual understanding. More could be said there, but that's kind of a brag. So I tried to put that in a sentence, which, of course, is the exact opposite of what I just bragged about on the last one. The subjective needs of the group are met by the objective wisdom of the leader. So the leader sees what the subjective needs of the group are and the objective needs as well. And in his wisdom, he tries to meet those needs. I always have felt as a leader, this sounds so bad to say it this way, but I don't know how else to say it. If you're going to be an effective leader, you have to mentally be a step or two ahead of everybody else in the group. It's not that you're smarter than them. It's not that you care any more than them. It's that that's your role to play. That's what you're supposed to do. And so, whereas when we leave Pathway tonight, everybody will take a little bit of the residue with them. And some of you may go to sleep thinking about it. I wake up in the middle of the night to pee, and I'm thinking about it. I wake up Monday morning, and I'm thinking about it. That's not a bad thing. If I'm obsessing over it, that isn't healthy. But if I'm thinking about it, that's a natural thing, because it's my role to stay out ahead of things a couple steps. That's the role I play, because in this situation, I'm the buck stops here guy. I don't really like that role a lot of times, but it's the role I'm paid to do it, and I'm glad to do it. 80%, I'll say, I'm not deciding. Sometimes Robbie has to pay for it, because like we'll get ready to go do something, and I'll say, I'm not deciding. But I don't want to decide. Yeah, you got to decide what we're doing, because I've made all the decisions I'm going to make. So you decide what we're going to do. So we wind up eating places I didn't dream of. All right, so here's three things we're going to say in conjunction with all that. I once thought that everybody was a leader. And it, in some sense, you are. I mean, if you're a parent, you're some sort of leader. You know, everybody is some sort of leader, but not everybody some of us aren't natural born leaders. How we lead a group of people reveals as much about us as, say, a crisis will. You can tell what's inside of a person when they face a crisis, you know, and you don't, you know, we've said this over and over, you never know what's in a sponge until you exert pressure on it. It's sitting there on the counter and you think, I'm not sure what's in that sponge. You put pressure on it, so all of a sudden you see what's there. So a crisis reveals the character of a person. Leadership reveals a character of a person. And happy, healthy leaders, this one helped me so much when somebody told me. Happy, healthy leaders are responsible in the group, but not for the group. When I finally bought that, Okay. I'm just going to be honest with you. When y'all know I get up in the middle of the night and pee. I've told you that about 50 times. So when I get up in the middle of the night to pee, and I can't get back to sleep because I'm obsessing over pathway, that's when I feel like I'm responsible for it. That the success or failure of this ministry rests on my shoulders. It doesn't. This is not my ministry. I have a role to play here, and I will be responsible in that role and do the best. I'll be the best me I could be in that role, but I'm not responsible for this ministry because it's not mine. He's led it. It's, you know, and obviously he's blessed it, and obviously he's led it, so I think I'm right there. So to me, a happy, and I didn't discover that. Somebody told me that. But a happy, healthy leader is one who is responsible in the group. They may be the buck stops here leader. They're responsible in the group, but they're not responsible for the group. I'm not sure about this one. I wrote it down and I thought, are you sure about that? And I thought, no, I'm not sure about that. But I think I'm right here. If you want to talk about it afterwards, your leadership as much as the group configuration. That we might think that the way the group is configured determines what kind of leader I'm going to be. That is, to a certain extent, true. But I think what determines my type of leadership, more than anything else, is my sense of self-worth and how well I understand myself and how accepting I am of myself. Because when I come to accept myself and I come to love myself, I can lead without taking things personally. I can lead without having my ego invested in it. And I can take criticism, I can take pushback, I can take alternate ideas, and it doesn't cut my feet out from under me because I feel okay about who I am. I think I'm right on that, I'm not sure, but your sense of self-worth determines your leadership as much or more than the group configuration. Here's the last thing I want to say about just natural leadership. I personally think that a good leader always spots, he's always aware, he or she is always aware and looking for, and he encourages passion and potential in everybody in the group. I personally believe that a good leader should always work themselves out of a job. That you should spot other leaders and encourage them and help them to where if you slipped out of the picture, you would hardly be missed. I think that is good leadership. When you see a church, and this happened in my church, which indicates I wasn't a very good leader, but the last church I left, when I left, over half the people left. That's not good leadership on my part. You see what I'm saying? They were loyal to me. They weren't loyal to what was going on there. I'm not proud of that. They did go to other churches, which I'm kind of proud of that, and I've kept up with them, and again, I'm 63. I'm going to be 64 in a couple of months. I don't know how much longer I've got here. I feel okay. I may be here for 10 more years. I don't know. But I would like to think that when I leave Pathway, it'll be a seamless, easy transition because there'll be other people ready to step right up and do what needs to be done here. So I think good leaders always spot and encourage passion and potential in the people in their group. And here's the other thing that you've heard me say over and over, and I don't do this because I'm the leader. I do this because I really think it's missing in our culture and in the body of Christ. When you see potential and passion in somebody, say it. Tell them. Look them in the eye and tell them. I met somebody new this week and instantly knew that we were heart kin. Instantly knew. We spent 2 hours talking. And she told me her story. I said, tell me your story. So she told me. I said, how did you come to know God? She told me that. And we're just sitting there weeping as she's telling. So she wanted to hear my story. So I started to tell her my story. I have never, ever been listened to like that before, ever. And I've encountered some really good listeners. I thought, my goodness gracious, this little lady here knows how to listen. And I thought, okay, so I could just leave this conversation the way it is. But I thought, no. I looked her in the eye and I said, you are a tremendous listener. And I said, you listen with your eyes. Her eyes were just, I mean, they looked into your soul, and she heard not just the words, but she heard who I was and my, you know. And you could see the look on her face like, oh my, nobody ever told me that before. I said, yeah, you're a tremendous listener. But have you tried that here lately? Because we've been talking about it a lot. When you speak into somebody's life and you see what happens in them, it's not that you plant a seed. It's that you water a seed that's already been trying to grow, and you finally give it opportunity to grow. You speak it, you cultivate it, you water it, you fertilize it, and all of a sudden, because the look on their faces, a lot of times, all of a sudden, like, yeah, I am. All they needed was to be told, and boom, it explodes. So I think a good leader, not just leaders, I think we all should, but especially a good leader should do that. So how do you handle poor leadership? I've got to put my glasses on just to see what time it is. We're in good shape. Okay. So what do you, because listen, when I was asked in the lesson for Thursday, describe your worst boss, I thought I've only had two good bosses in my whole life. I worked on the college farm at Asbury College in Wilmore, and his name was Travis Witt. He didn't have a tooth in his mouth. He butchered the King's English. He walked with a limp, but he was one of the best bosses I ever had. That man loved me. He took me under his wing. He was wise. He was gracious. He was kind. He was Jesus to me. That was when I was 16, 17, 18 years old. I went all that time until I got hired here and never had a good boss. In fact, I had some horrible bosses, horrid, nightmarish bosses until I got here. And now my bosses, for the most part, are my kids' age, and they're the best bosses I've ever had. I mean, I would follow them off a cliff. They're super good bosses. So, for the most part, okay, I'd never ask for a raise to raise hand. But if think just for a minute, if you got, all right, okay, bad bosses, good bosses, all right? So, in your experience over the years of employment, how many would say that the bad boss's side far outweighs the good boss's side? Just interested, show of hands. Bad bosses. We got several. All right, so see, I'm preaching to the choir here. Yeah, everybody knows what I'm talking about. It sucks to work for a I said bad boss about five times, didn't I? Bad boss. Okay. I'm sorry. I have a really bad boss. I guess you could say that. Okay, so how do you handle poor leadership? How do you handle toxic authority? Because in the world we live in, that's the norm more than, you know, having good authority, healthy authority. So I don't have any ready answers for this, but I've tried to categorize what makes a boss toxic or caustic. Have you had cruel bosses? Just downright abusively cruel bosses. I've had one or two that were like that. That were just, they seemed to enjoy inflicting pain and discomfort on me. Not all my less than desirable boss, but I've had a couple who you could see the delight when they were cruel. Another problem we have with bosses, we're going to hear a groan across the... What do you do when you work for somebody and you know more than they do? Well, they're inept, you know? I mean, how many of you have done that? You've worked for a boss and you're thinking, oh my goodness, I know more than they do. You know, I'm ept, they're inept. That's off Andy Griffith. Did you ever see that one? I'm ept. I think that's great. Carry a little flag, I'm ept. Let's do that on a t-shirt. I'm ept. That would be great. So, I mean, what do you do when you have a... When you have a boss who you know more than they do. Well, okay, so what if you have a boss who is just kind of lifeless? They're apathetic. They're waiting for their pension, you know. They're just cruising, and there's no get up and go in them. There's just a lot of, yeah, got up and went. They're just kind of apathetic. Or what if you have a boss that is just completely and absolutely unimaginative? There is no cruel, inept, lifeless, unimaginative. That would take a whole other two or three lessons just to get your creative ideas, because I'm sure we've all dealt with that and we've come up with ways, with solutions for that. One of the things that kind of generally came out, well, we can say two things real quick. One is if you've got somebody who's abusive, I think that we need to do the turn your other cheek thing. And in case anybody thinks the turn your other cheek thing is a passive thing, it is not a passive thing. It's what Martin Luther King Jr. did back in the 60s. He said, we're going to let you spray us with hoses and sick your dogs on us, and the whole nation is going to see what you're doing. So the turn the other cheek thing is, you got away with the first slap. Now everybody's watching. Would you like to hit the other one? Is that the kind of person you want to be? It's, you know, you take me to court for my shirt, I'm going to give you my whole wardrobe. When we walk out, I'm nearly naked. You got my wardrobe around your arm. Over your arm, is that the kind of person you want to be? So sometimes, in the terms of cruelty, sometimes you have to force that cruelty out into the open. And you don't force it, but you stay two or three steps ahead of them, and you make them be cruel to you in front of other people, to where they have to say, oh, this is really not the kind of person I want to be. That's one approach. The other thing is about the ineptness, the lifelessness, the unimaginative, is, and we talked about this some in our night group, is how do you get, you've got these ideas, you've got this zeal, you've got this passion, you've got this fire inside of you, what could be done in the group. How do you get that passed on to your boss? How do you get that into the authority figure? How do you get them to buy into that? And the secret we kind of collectively came up with in our Thursday night group, this was after group, so we can kind of talk about it, but I'm not naming names. Just we kind of collectively came up with it. You come up with a brilliant idea, and then you make them think that they came up with it. And it sounds kind of sneaky and manipulative and all. I'm going to say it's not. But for the good of the group, you know, and they are excited they came up with a plan. They came up with an idea. They came up with, you know, and maybe to repeat that two or three times might get them right back on track. You never know. But anyway, that's just an idea. So, okay, what time is it now? Okay, we need to be done with this. So what are signs of a really, like, uber-toxic leader? I just, I, I thought, okay, we've talked about being a really good leader, and what do you do with leaders who aren't ideal leaders? Well, what do you do with an uber toxic? We're talking about the worst you could possibly imagine. I'm talking about the person who demonizes and destroys any and all threats to their leadership. It's not a thought, it's a reaction. Boom. They demonize and destroy any and all threats to their leadership. They have to continually tell you how great they are. Continually tell you, remind you how great they are. They create fear and chaos and discord with any and all foes instead of unity and hope for all. We live in a world where this kind of leadership is becoming semi-popular. And that scares me. It scares me. Adolf Hitler used that. We've had others who have used that. And so I'm really wary of a leader who demonizes and destroys any and all threats. They continue to tell you how great they are, and they create fear and chaos and discord instead of hope and unity. We have churches going that way. We have politics going that way. We have a lot of forces in our culture, not just in America, all over the world, who are going this way. Maybe it shouldn't scare me. Maybe that kind of leadership has to go almost to the edge before we see what's going on. And we say, ooh, we can't have that. We don't. Because there's another, and I'm seeing it everywhere. It's being written in new books. It's being showing up in films. It's showing up in churches that are being transformed. But we have a whole other group who are saying, this is really about love. This is about valuing and loving the person in front of you. And instead of me seeking to build my empire, I want to build you up. I want to encourage you and help you become all you can become. And so there's, it used to be all fuzzy and mixed together. And now it's becoming more and more, you kind of have to choose between one or the other. Am I going to go the dictator type, or am I going to go let's love each other type? And so in terms of leadership, I want to double down on grace every time. I want to double down on love and affirmation and respect every time. That's just me. So, okay. It's all yours, Matt.
So I'll walk around, take up any collection that you might want to give. No obligation, but all the money stays with Pathway.